Pastor Gary Connor welcomes you to this message from Christian Worship Center, located in Zillow, Washington. Christian Worship Center is shaping the lives of people and families through a vibrant church community and world-class educational program. Our passion is to impact our state, national, and worldwide community with the message of salvation through Jesus Christ. Get ready for this powerful message.
First of all, Labor Day is a day, I didn't know this, but it's a day set aside for commerce and labor-related reasons. A long time ago, I always thought Labor Day was like a day where we shouldn't do any work. And I tried convincing my wife of that, and she told me I was wrong. No, actually, it truly is a day set aside for commerce and labor-related reasons. Labor Day actually started out as a federal holiday in the 1890s after a strike that turned deadly. Federal troops called in. They shot it up a little bit with the strikers. And President Cleveland decided this would be a good time to set up a holiday just to make the striking and the other unions happy. And so what he did is he created a national holiday. There already was holidays like this in other countries, but the president decided that after we shot up a few of your members, we'll give you a holiday, I assume is his logic. And thanks, Dave. I actually thought that would go over a little bit different than what it did right there. But there's actually a rhyme and reason to this, which growing up I thought it was because as of tomorrow we're no longer allowed to wear white pants. The only guy probably able to pull off white pants in this room anyways would be Randy DeFord. But, well, you would be. You would be able to. Or purple. Apparently, that's not the whole point of Labor Day. Labor Day is also not intended to be the end of summer, which a lot of us think of it as. Apparently, the other 50 people who were supposed to be here this morning thought it was the end of summer, and so they left. That also is not the true purpose of Labor Day. It actually is, if you see all the Labor Day sales, you see all the offers and the special deals that are going on right now, to be honest, that actually is one of the intents of Labor Day. One of the intentions of Labor Day is to strengthen commerce. One of the intentions of Labor Day is actually to bolster sales in certain markets. And so I didn't know that. It's also created to celebrate those who labor. It's created to celebrate those who work and those who do, you know, things with their hands and things with their bodies. And so we want to celebrate that. And I didn't know that. I had no idea that this was actually a holiday legitimately made to celebrate those who work. And also, it actually is also set up to strengthen commerce. It's actually set up to bring in the sales and do that. And that actually was set up back in the 1890s. I had no idea about that. Now, everything I just gave you was brought from Wikipedia. And so those of you guys who know anything know that everything I just told you guys might be completely false. But in as much as I believe everything the internet says, it's almost as close to gospel as it can be if it comes from Wikipedia. I don't know. Those of you guys who know what I'm talking about, who believe in Wikipedia like I do, know that there is nothing false coming from Wikipedia. I love that place. I can get lost for days on Wikipedia. Is there anybody else who does what I do where like you look for something? You guys are all liars. I'm tired of it this morning, okay? You guys came in this morning. You weren't even real. Today is a day to work, okay? This is Labor Day weekend. You were supposed to come here and work hard this morning, okay? We're supposed to see worshipers dancing, flag people. There's supposed to be all kinds of crazy stuff going on this morning. And you guys, the song, did like this, nobody did it until the third time around, okay? Marlene was the only one up here doing it. I go over there, Dave is still sitting down, okay? This is getting ridiculous, all right, people? Now, when I start talking about Wikipedia, I know that 99% of you guys, as soon as you pull up a Google page, okay, you're like, oh, I'm going to search on cookies, okay? And it comes up, cookies, Wikipedia. I know that 99% of you liars are out there going like this, Wikipedia, all right, it knows everything. You click it, you read it, you click on the 15 links for the different styles of cookies. Yeah, see, now you're starting to admit it. You click on the different styles of cookies. Chocolate chip, I had no idea. Where were chocolate chips made from? Of course Wikipedia knows where chocolate chips are made from. So you scroll through all those. Apparently you end up at some Bavarian village in 1532. Saying, I had no idea about the order of the golden fleece. That's the circle of life. Or Wikipedia, I don't know. But I could stay there for days, okay? So when I say something this morning, perhaps eliciting some type of crowd participation, I know we're all tired. I know we still have one more day to get through this weekend before we can go back to our merry lives. But please, if nothing else, give me the satisfaction of at least kind of going like this. Okay? Instead of me having to wake you out of some trance with a 30-second tirade, okay? So just work with me here this morning, all right? Now, that was poor. Who was that? Martha, that was... You know... Thanks, Dave. Okay, that's better. Turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 8, please. We're actually going to have a sermon, and talk about awesome things. We actually are going to talk about work, as it stands. We're going to talk about taking up crosses, following hymns. It was actually a really good worship this morning. For where I wanted to go. Also, the word of the Lord this morning. It was really good because what the Lord shared with us this morning is starting out with remembering who we are, that we are His children. We are bought and paid for by His blood. We are His children. He loves us as a parent loves a child. But there was also an encouragement in there for us to go and do. And, you know, it's kind of the same encouragement that most parents have for their kids, to where, as a parent, you know, you want your children to not be part of the video game generation. You want your kids to actually go and do. Instead of downloading the iSwing app on your phone, where you can watch a swing go back and forth, and your child sits there mesmerized watching this, you actually encourage them to go outside and sit on the swing and feel physically what it's like to move back and forth in the air. It's a magical feeling, children, to actually swing upon a swing. We encourage our kids to do. We encourage our kids to move. The Lord does the same. I admit that what I'm going to talk about this morning is even just a little bit self-analytical. I titled the sermon this morning, Part-Time Jesus. Because not all of us are 100% all the time Jesus. We do not... How many of you guys have your work... I have a work personality. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody else. Okay. Someone, Rich, brave enough to raise your hand. I appreciate that. I have a work personality. I am what's considered a jerk at work, apparently. I am considered rude. And I, you know, to be honest, I thought it was really close to my church personality. I'm kind of cocky, kind of rude, kind of... But, you know, most people find that charming. apparently at work, it doesn't go over as well. I have a work personality. It's not that it's different. I mean, I've had several youth group kids come up and work for me, and I am who I am at work. But I expect things at work. At work, I'm the boss. Okay? Nowhere else do I get that satisfaction. Home, I'm just joking. That was totally a joke. She's back in the corner. She didn't even throw anything. But at work, I'm the boss. And so if I say, hey, I need this pallet of stuff moved over here, and I walk away, I don't know if you guys know what I'm saying. If I walk away, that's kind of like my end of the conversation. And I expect that when I go back into said area, that pallet will no longer be there. And sometimes you have employees who have a lot of questions. Which one thing I've learned over time is that questions are reasons not to do something. Okay, see a few people, hey, move that pallet over there. Oh, this pallet? Question one. So should I move it all at once or just piece by piece? I don't know. I hadn't thought that far into it. I thought moving this pallet from here to there was a self. Well, should I take stuff out of the boxes or should I just leave it in the boxes and move the boxes onto this pallet? Should I put another pallet over here so that I can move that pallet onto this pallet? What if I use the forklift? Well, I mean, now you're getting into some seriously technical questions that I'm not prepared to answer. All I wanted was for you to move the pallet from there to there, and then I walk away. When I come back and see that the pallet's there and I hear all your questions, you know what I realize? I realize you didn't want to move the pallet. That's what it comes down to. You know, at that point, Work Billy comes out. And Work Billy is fairly sarcastic. Caustic is a good word for those of you guys who have a vocabulary. And so that's how I can be. I don't use profanity because that's bad. But because I do have an awesome vocabulary, I can say a lot of things to get my point across without ever using words that people would consider bad. And I've found that as my 12-year-old gets older, he's understanding those words, and so I can use them on him too. But unfortunately, children, your children, don't like the boss personality. They want the dad personality. Does that make sense? They want to hear the kind, nice things, encouraging things, build up things, instead of the why didn't things get cleaned up in the yard things. It's a very simple process. You pick it up, you put it in the bag, bump, bump. Okay? That really nice. Good work. I didn't know how that was going to go either. I'm actually very well pleased in that. Thank you. If you don't know, that is the best Disney cartoon that Walt ever invented. And if you do know, God bless you. If you don't know, I don't know what to tell you. But in Mark chapter 8, verses 34 through 38, We learn about the mentality of the part-time Jesus. You see, I have my work personality, I have my church personality, I even have a baseball personality. When I coach baseball, maybe I just call it a coach personality, because apparently I say things when I coach. And, you know, from being a player, you know, I was kind of a cocky, talk back to you kind of player. I don't know if any of you guys who are here that remember playing basketball with us in the church league. I don't think anybody's here that played basketball. Oh, Kevin, hi. Kevin probably does remember some of the things that I would say. And I would talk incessantly with the referees or the other players, and I got into trouble. I don't ever mean anything bad. I don't mean to be mean. It's just something sounds funny in my head, and it comes out. And apparently, a lot of people with whistles in their hands don't appreciate what I say. Again, it's not mean. It's not that I don't like the people. It's just that that's what I thought would be a good thing to say, and it probably wasn't. When I'm talking this morning about a part-time Jesus, I'm talking about being able to compartmentalize Jesus in your life. Does that make sense? Because a lot of times we do that. Now, I know that there are some blessed saints here who have no problem with this. There are some of you who have 100% Jesus all the time, everywhere you go, everywhere you do. And to be honest, I mean, you're the backbone of who we are. It doesn't mean that anybody's better or worse. What it means is that we have to learn that as we compartmentalize our attitudes, as we compartmentalize who we are, that Jesus is still number one in said compartment. Now, I can't, when I ask someone to move a pallet and they don't do it, I haven't found it beneficial for me to go up to them and ask them to pray with me. I tell them sometimes that I'm praying for them as I'm writing them up. Actually, I did do that. I'm praying that you learn how to do better at your job so that I don't have to fire you. I actually did tell a person that. I couldn't write that down because our company wouldn't appreciate that. But I told them that as I was writing them up, and to be honest, it worked. Also, the fact that this was the last time that I was going to write them up before I fired them might have worked as well. But I want you guys to understand that as we compartmentalize things, we need to prioritize as well. Jesus needs to be on top of every compartment. And that's where a lot of times we get into trouble. We compartmentalize our life, but we don't always bring Jesus to the top of every compartment. You see, in Mark chapter 8, verse 34, we're actually going to read, I'm going to read through this whole section, then we're going to bounce kind of in between. Mark chapter 8, verse 34, when he had called the people to himself, with his disciples also, he said to them, "Whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him, the Son of Man, will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." The point of this address between Jesus and the disciples and the people is not to deny yourself. It's not to pick up the cross. The whole point of this is to be ready when he comes. The whole point of this goes down to verse 38. "Whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous generation, of him the Son of Man will be ashamed when he returns." That's the whole point. The first three verses of this section are the process by which you learn not to be ashamed of him. But the point of it is that whoever is ashamed of me, I will be ashamed of him. And that is something that we forget sometimes. We remember that we need to take up our cross. We remember that we need to take up ourselves. But a lot of times, remember to carry the process, but we forget it's the heart and it's the love and it's the grace and the mercy of Jesus that we should have been carrying. Do you ever notice that when you get stuck just carrying the wood, how heavy it is? When you're worried more about the cross and the representation of said cross and who I'm supposed to be, and how I'm supposed to talk and how I'm supposed to act. How heavy that burden is. But carrying the Spirit and the love and the grace and the mercy of Jesus Christ, there is no burden in that. There is no weight to that. He's telling the disciples to be steadfast, to live a life that is continually representing Him. When I said that we compartmentalize, I have a boss, I have a job, and part of my life in that job is to continually represent Him. My job is to make Him money. My job—I don't make a lot of money, but He does. He's okay. We're not going to take up an offering for Him. But the point is that from 6 to 6, or 5 to 5, or whatever hours I decide to work that day, that I'm making Him money. I take up that cross. Now, when I take up that cross, does that mean that I leave my Jesus cross behind? No. What it means is that as I take up His cross and represent His company, that I need to make sure, even as I do that, Jesus Christ is represented on that cross. A lot of times, we know that we need to take up the boss's cross, that we need to take up the boss's mantle. But we forget that Jesus still needs to be the priority of that. That Jesus needs to be at the top of that list. Verse 36 talks about living a life that gains. Living a life that has some type of positive result of it. We think about money. We think about power, prestige, position in whatever company or even in the church, whatever church operation we're doing. Am I moving up? Am I gaining? We think of all those things. Is it possible to gain in a spiritual life without moving anywhere? Is it possible to gain in a spiritual life without ever becoming something different than who you are? In other words, is it possible to gain in a spiritual life just showing up when the doors are open? Just being here when pastor says to be here? Or do you have to do something different, something extraordinary, something more than what is normally requested to be able to gain spiritually? No. Yes. Whatever. You see, the Lord calls us to do certain things. The Lord calls us to be certain aspects of His body. There may be a season or a time where you're just blood flowing through the veins. But you're required to be blood flowing through the veins. You're required to be the life-giving force flowing through the veins. Sometimes you're required to be the hand. Maybe that hand means that you're a Sunday school teacher, kids' church teacher, teacher in the school. Maybe you're required to be the eyes. Maybe you're required to be the feet, bringing the gospel to the world. But the point is that whatever God has called you to do, do it. But it's also okay if God has called you to be the blood, as long as you're bringing life. When we showed up this morning, it took about 6 songs for me to get that life. I know I'm the only one. I know as soon as the music started that 99% of you people here this morning were dancing, spinning, jumping. I know. I know I'm the only one who said, Lord, I need to focus this morning. I need to really get... And then finally, it just clicked and I was in worship. I know I'm the only one. But if there is anybody else like me, who might have taken a few songs to get into worship, who might have taken a few songs to get into that life-giving spirit, who took a few songs to become the blood that God has called them to be. Can I just say this to you? If God called you to come here this morning to worship, and you know what? There are days and there are times where we have so many things rolling and so many things going that it's almost impossible to think about what's going up on the screens, what's going on in the music. I know that. But that is exactly the fight that He is calling you to fight this morning. To be the blood, to give the life. Because someone else in here is called to be the prayer. Someone else in here is called to be the lips. Someone else in here is called to be the ears. Someone else is called to be... You did your job this morning because you were the ears this morning. You heard the Lord speaking to you. But if we weren't worshiping, if people weren't being the blood, if people weren't being the life of that, bringing that sensation, bringing that to that point where now it's His responsibility. Do you guys see how that gets let down? You might not be the preacher, but you are being part of the body. But that still requires taking up the cross. That still requires living a life of gain. Maybe you didn't gain your ministerial license this morning, but did you gain some type of spiritual growth? Did you lay down everything else in your life enough to where you gained some type of spiritual growth? If you show up in church any day of the week and you don't gain something, you weren't there. Because as soon as we walk through the doors, it should be a cross. There should be a pile of wood right out there. You know what I'm saying? As soon as you walk through the doors, there should be crosses laid down. There should be all kinds of stuff so that, you know what, if you need to pick it up on your way back out the door, do it. But listen, when you walk in here, you're part of the body, you're part of the flow. When you walk in here, if you didn't gain something, if you didn't gain even a measure of joy, a measure of peace, how many times have you come in here just saying, Lord, I just need to receive peace this morning? How many times have you walked in with that feeling and gone away with the same anger, the same hurt, because you forgot to really, truly let God move inside of you? You didn't gain anything because you weren't willing to lay down, you weren't willing to deny, you weren't willing to pick up the right cross. You see, the Lord, He wants to move in those ways. He wants to put gains in our life. But if we don't allow Him to do that, then we come and go the same person. When we walk out of here this week, do we live a life of gains? Verse 36 says, "For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul?" What will it profit us if we gain the whole world and lose our soul? If I become someone that I'm not called to be, what profit is there? If I become the owner of Boeing, what will that do for me? Nothing, will it? I'm not going to win anything. I'm not going to gain anything in the real scheme of things. What will it profit me if I become a pastor of a 9 million member church? If I'm not called to be that guy, then I'm not going to gain anything, am I? But if I take up the cross that Jesus has placed out for me, I might not be rich. I might not ever be as awesome as I think I am. But I will have gained not the world, but I will have gained in His eyes, correct? You see, that's what I want us to be thinking of this morning. I want I don't know if this is scripturally correct. But I would like some type of capitalist spiritualism. Does that make sense? I don't want to be rich. I don't want to be great. I don't want to do things just for the sake of gaining. I don't have like an inventory. It's not like a video game where I know exactly how many things are in my crown and what level I need to go to be able to get the next crown so that I can finally fill it. You know, I'm not playing The Legend of Zelda, the spiritual version. Okay? But what I'm saying is that, you know, that spirit of capitalism is one that says, you know, I want to grow. I want to. How many times do we walk into church? How many times do we walk into an opportunity for real spiritual growth saying, I want to. I want to make some Jesus money. I don't know if that's even, that's not what he was talking about. But I want to grow. I want to become stronger in the faith. You know, a lot of times we'll take it if it's there. We'll take it if it shows up, but we don't go running for it. But I guarantee you, have you guys seen that Geico commercial with the dude riding the motorcycle that he's made of cash? You guys know what I'm talking about? Okay. Now, I guarantee you, all right, that if that dude rode across Stinking Chain Road right now, okay, maybe we're all getting out of church. That dude rides across, and if you look at that commercial, like the money's flowing right off of him. I think the best part about that is when he goes to pay for his gas, he looks down at the guy, and the guy pulls the dollar bill off of him, right? And then he needs some change, so he hits his head, and change falls out. I love that. And then he drives away, and the money's flowing. Okay, I guarantee you, if that dude drove by right now, I would knock over somebody. I'm serious, okay? I don't care. Steve, you're going down, okay? Finally, I'm going to knock you over. After all the years of me promising to knock you out, I'll do it right there if there's money on the road, okay? I'm going to push you down because there's money on the road. Things will get a little bit chippy, okay? And I know I'm not the only one, all right? You know, you guys can sit there, and I know I haven't been my normal, you know, hey, we're going to tell stories, we're going to have fun this morning. I know I haven't been that guy this morning. I'm sorry. I apologize, okay? Now, you guys didn't even come to see me anyways. Most of you guys didn't even know Pastor was gone, okay? So don't blame me. Blame yourself, all right? But listen, that was kind of Boss Billy right there, I know. But listen, you and I both know if there's money on the ground, someone's going to get knocked down, okay? And trust me, I'll be out there knocking people down. I mean, I'll pick you up and pray for you afterwards. But in the meantime, I'll knock you down. I don't care. All right. Now, capitalism for Jesus, I don't really know how this will work. Okay. I haven't spent a lot of time in spiritual economics. Okay. I know that there's probably a class somewhere that, you know, that will teach us how to do this. But the point is that In that capitalist mentality, you want and you strive and you push. There is no real time to sit back and relax, is there? There's no time in a capitalist mentality. If you're trying to make some money, you don't sit back and wait, do you? You look for an opportunity to make said money, don't you? But how many times, spiritually speaking, do we look for that opportunity to move and to grow? I need to pray for you. Because apparently you're not playing football this year. Your dad told me that. That's awesome. But you can almost dunk now, can't you? That's awesome. Okay? But do I need to run down and do I need to pray for you right now? You see what I'm saying? I mean, do I look for the opportunity? Because if he's not playing football, he must be sick in some way. And so we need to go pray for him, right? And so we're going to gather all the men, and I'm going to lead the charge, and by the time we're done praying for Joe, we're going to get up, and we're going to walk away, and I'll be able to look, and like, all right, there's a deposit of about 37 prayer credits. That's good. Thank you, Lord. Now, if it was a matter of selling him something, and I went down, and I say, how many hoses do you want? Okay, good. How many bolts? How many nuts? Okay, cool. And I can walk away looking at that. Okay, I made about $42 right there. That's not bad. Okay, can we do the same thing spiritually? No. And so, do we do the same thing spiritually? No. Right? Do we look for opportunities? And like I said earlier, I know there's some of you guys that do, and that's awesome. But I do believe I'm speaking to some people here this morning when I say, do we look for opportunities to pray for them just for the sake of praying for them, not hoping that the Lord deposits something into our account, but because he needs it? You know, I do wish that there was a type of that capitalist spirit. Did you guys know right now that the Canadian dollar, I have the current exchange rates. For every U.S. dollar, okay, that's 0.9865 Canadian dollars. Okay? I don't know what that means. For every U.S. dollar you give to a European banker and say, I need some euros, 0.7949. Again, I have no clue at all what that means. I know that, thank you. Right? But my point is that when I heard of euros, I actually thought they said churros. And I was so excited because those cinnamon pastries are delicious, okay? But the point is that, did you know that for every dollar, you get 10,000 Japanese yen? That's a lot of yen. I could live like a king until you realize that an apple costs 500,000 yen. That's a lot of yen for an apple. And so I wasn't as impressed as I was earlier. You see, the exchange rates, we look at those, we try to figure out, you know, where the money is, who's making more, who's a dollar stronger today, okay? If you ask that question, you have to accent in a certain accent. Yeah, is the dollar stronger today? I can't tell. And you know, it's kind of weird. I couldn't care less if the dollar's stronger, okay? I don't even know what that means. Every number I just read to you guys, I have no idea what that means. But what I do know is that there's some guy out there making money on whether my Canadian dollar is worth more than your American dollar. I know there's some dude out there who's plotting and designing the currency and exchange rate and who he's going to give money to and who he's going to take money away from so that he can make more money. Does that make sense? There's an aggressive nature that comes with capitalism. And if you're living a life that gains, spiritually speaking, I think it doesn't hurt to have a little more aggressive nature. It's okay to show people that you're a Christian. It's okay to show people you might not be totally comfortable with getting all crazy and tense and like actually praying for people in front of other people. You know, I get people that stop in my office all the time. Okay, I have an open door policy. I just have a shut off light policy. What that means is that unless you saw my truck when you drove by, you might stop into my office and, you know, you might not know if I'm there or not. And it actually works out really well because I get at this point to pick and choose who I want to talk to. Does that mean, you know, I know that seems kind of, but I'm a pretty busy guy. Okay, but what I do get is I do get a lot of people who know that I'm there because they'll see my truck or they'll just walk in and they just walk right into my office. And I got no problem with that. That doesn't bother me because, you know, I'll sit and we'll take time and we'll talk. But I had this customer last week. He's a Christian guy. Cool guy. I've known him for years and years and years. And he came into my office, just walked right in. Okay, and you know I'm busy doing magic, whatever I do, hocus pocus kind of stuff, making money. And this guy walks in and he's like, "We gotta talk." And okay, we'll talk. For about 20 minutes, he sat here and he told me about all the things that are going wrong in his life. Okay, now mind you, I'm at work and phones are ringing and things are going on around me, and I got one gal that understands that I've got someone in here who just needed to talk for a second. And so she's trying at her best to leave us alone. There's only three people in the office, and we got like four people at the counter, two lines ringing, and she's doing her best to make sure that I don't get bothered. She's doing her best, and then finally, she has to break in, and she goes, okay, listen, I got this, this, and this, and this, and this, and this guy's crying. And I know that you know, you kind of walk away. When people are crying, especially in public or something like that, you kind of walk away. That's the right thing to do? No? Okay, I'm not sure. That's what most people do. And so when this guy's crying right here, and he had just got done telling me, I'm not going to share with you anything, but what I'm telling you is that he got done sharing some pretty heavy stuff. And I was just getting ready to say, well, let's pray about it. And she came in, and she, okay, do this, this, and this, and this, and this, and this. By the time that I got done with that, he was ready to get up and leave. Because that time right there had been broken. And I said, hold on, let's pray. And I prayed for him anyways. And here's the honest truth of this. Have you ever prayed for someone and you know that they're not listening? And you know that they're not receiving because the switch has been turned, the lights are off, and there's nobody home? Is that not the toughest prayer that you'll ever pray? But I felt like right then and there that this is time to make that deposit. Whether he hears it, feels it, knows it, or whatever, it's time to make that deposit. You see, we have to make a choice to live a life of gain. And he didn't leave, and I didn't walk out and just chalk that off of my list, or, you know, put another crown or put another jewel in my crown. But I realized that it was something that had to be done, right, Lord? It was something that had to be done. We had to pray right there. We had to pray right then, or else nothing would have happened. It just would have been someone coming in and crying and walking away. So we had to pray. It's not always comfortable to pray the prayer. It's not always comfortable to make the deposit, to make the gains. But we have to do it. It's not always the best timing, but we have to do it. Verse 37. Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? The current soul exchange rate, by my calculations, is soul equals parentheses time times parentheses money times parentheses convenience. And the reason I wrote it out that way is because I'm at the time right now an algebra tutor. I'm helping Drew to learn algebra and to do a good job in algebra, all the while remembering why I hated algebra. I have no clue at all why we're doing this, because I actually stopped taking math once it got to that geometry, algebra, trig phase. And I didn't know that. I hope there's no students in. Oh, there's a few. But I'm going to say it anyways. I didn't know there was a choice that I could just. 20 years ago, I just said, I'm not going to math anymore. And I quit going to math. And somehow or another, I passed. And it was the best class I ever took. Because I didn't have to show up. And I think what it was is that when I did show up, I was so over the top dumb and not able to understand the concept that the teacher just passed me to move me along. And so as I'm teaching Drew, I'm remembering how difficult and how horrible algebra is to me. And so I wrote this equation out like this. A soul equals time times money times convenience. How many of you take into account any of these factors before you enter into some type of ministerial encounter. Before you enter into some type of Jesus encounter, you see a need. Do you figure, how much time will it take if I pray with this person? Does the question, how much money will it cost if I actually help this person? Does the question, is this going to really be convenient for me? Enter into your discussion when you encounter some type of opportunity to change someone else's life. Because if it does, what you've begun to do is count the cost of a soul. What you've done is you've tried to translate someone's soul, someone's spiritual life into an equation. And now you're trying to value whether or not that's valuable enough for you to change your plans, your time, your actions. And so, what is it worth? How much of your time are you willing to give to change someone else's life? I can't answer you. I can't answer this for you. This is a question that you need to ask yourself. How much time is someone's soul worth to you? How much money is someone's soul worth to you? How much inconvenience is someone's soul worth to you? If you have asked the question, then you've begun the process of weighing the cost. And I know that that's not a happy thing to be able to put into your mind. And I know that this is something that most people have actually gone through before. It's not a happy thought when it gets brought out like this. It's not a cheery thought when it gets brought out like this. But it's the equation of gaining the world and losing your soul. It's the equation of making a choice to further you or someone else. The last thing I had this morning was the crux of the cross, verses 34 and 35. And I certainly hope that this gets happier. When he had called the people to himself with his disciples also, he said to them, "Whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever desires to live his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it." It's not the denial, it's the desire. It's not the fact that we deny ourselves, it's the fact that we desire to deny ourselves. I've eaten dinners before that I didn't want to eat. I've eaten food before that I didn't want to eat. Maybe I was too full. Maybe last night I had a Carl's Jr. Have you guys seen the ads for these things? It's a pulled pork sandwich, and you have the option of going like just dumbest on these things. Okay, and I chose dumbest because there's a double that you can put on there, and it's like pulled pork, two hamburgers, and I think there was some cheese involved. I'm not sure. I got a little rummy-eyed about halfway through, and then there's like this crispy onions that you put on top, and then barbecue sauce just all over everything. Okay, and I ate this thing, and then apparently a large fry ended up in my hand, and a large Diet Coke. I don't know how that happened, but the point is that I started eating this thing. And I got about halfway through and I realized, this is horrible. I could very well die right here. Can I just say, Carl Sr. did not even like his kids, okay? If he drove them in some way, shape, or form to cook like this, okay? Inflicted whatever psychological drama makes people cook like this, okay? Carl Sr. was a bad man. Okay? He was a bad father because whatever he did to the junior made people eat like this, okay? And I ate like this. I killed this thing. And then I went to a buddy's house for our fantasy football draft an hour later. This is what's so stupid. Okay? I wasn't hungry. I had no any reason to gain from doing this, but I did. They had boneless pork, you know, like the big, in barbecue sauce. They had bratwurst. They had this pasta salad. I brought chips because I'm cheap. I considered that a good investment. And then the worst part of it is they had like this. I got totally duped into eating fruit last night. This is so stupid. This is like the total trick. And I know that somewhere there's a wife out there saying, "Did Billy eat it?" that's horrible. Just the trickery that women will come to make men eat fruit. They took like apples and chopped up apples. Okay? I don't eat fruit. I don't like apples. Okay? That's just my personal preference. I know there's probably people out here that grow apples. And, you know, there's other people that'll eat your apples. But the thing is that they chopped up apples and then they chopped up grapes and they put grapes in there. But then they covered it all in whipped cream, right? Yeah. All right? Yeah. You ever seen a fat kid that didn't like whipped cream? Okay. So, you know, I'm excited now. I'm listening. Okay. And then they took Snickers bars and chopped up Snickers bars and threw them in there. And then they took chocolate chips and chopped up chocolate chips and put them in there. Okay. Now, I heard Snickers is what I heard. I didn't hear apples and grapes, you know, just whatever selective hearing that I have. You know, Dan and Ray were like, "Is this Snickers in here?" You know, and they're just shoveling this stuff in. And I was like, "Well, I got to get some Snickers covered in whipped cream." So I get over there and I literally got in. This is so embarrassing just to even mention this. The fact that I got in about 5 mouthfuls of this stuff before I went, "Is that an apple? Is that an apple?" And they're like, "Yeah, yeah," you know. And I was like, "That is messed up." And I talked to Ray. I even did their wedding. Okay, the buddy of mine whose wife did this to me. I did their wedding, and I actually looked in a little bit to see if I could figure out some way to undo that, because I'm just a little bit concerned about the fact that she is willing to do that, okay? Maybe a step too far. But the point is that I ate these apples, and I got them down, and I was just, yeah. But I wasn't hungry when I showed up. I was totally full. I was actually not feeling good when I got there from how much I had already eaten. But there's all this stuff, and the desire kicked in. I didn't want to eat, but the desire, I saw this stuff, Jonathan, and I was like, "Yeah, Yahtzee, I thought I scored." I didn't care what else happened through the fantasy football draft. All I know is that I'm eating all this food here, and it's delicious. You see what I'm saying? Okay, the desire took over. The desire took over. When Jesus says that whoever desires to follow me, that's when you learn how to deny. That's when you learn how to pick up. But first, you have to have the desire to follow him. You have to have the desire to be able to say, "I'm going to do this with all of my heart, with everything that I have." And you know what, guys? When I talked this morning about compartmentalizing things, when I talked this morning about, or at the beginning of this, about compartmentalizing, it's that desire that we have to follow Jesus that needs to be at the top of all these things. Sometimes we can't be as open. Sometimes we can't be, you know, willing to offer prayer for every person in boss mode. I can't pray with every person that comes across my desk in boss mode. Okay, when I'm coaching, we've had kids get hurt, and I've prayed for kids, and I didn't ask their parents if it was okay or not. You know, I've had kids get hurt, and I just said, "Hey, let's start praying." Okay, that's I felt like that was the right thing to do, and I felt like that was the right thing. But I can't, if I've got a kid who's not doing what they're supposed to do, I can't pull them aside and, "Hey, let's pray and try to figure out why you didn't block anybody and let that kid get hurt." That's a tough conversation to have, right, Chad? You've coached. You can't pray every time a kid. Every once in a while, it doesn't hurt to be able to get into there and just really give that coach voice, you know, the free flow. I can't do it because this is hooked up, and if I got my coach voice going, it would be loud and it would probably ruin speakers. But my point is that I can't pray with each kid that didn't do their job right, can I, Chad? No. Sometimes I have to yell to get my point across. Later on, I can give him a hug. But not right there. The reason I'm saying this is because the desire that Jesus talks about is a desire that encompasses every compartment of your life. It's one that should be there in every compartment of your life. It should be there in every piece of your life. And I know the reason that I started this sermon this morning, the reason that I'm preaching this sermon this morning, is not because I'm better than. It's not because I'm awesome at. It's because maybe even sometimes I need to be reminded. To put the desire to follow Him, to put the desire to do the right thing, to do the best thing at the top of each compartment. Does that make sense? It's not always the easiest thing to do. Joyce, I know where you work. You hear stuff in there all day long, don't you? Oh, you're not? Oh. Well, for your ears, that's probably a good thing. Ben, I know where you work. I've eaten lunch with your people. They are a rough people. I heard stuff I've never heard before. And somehow, Ben still loves Jesus. When I show up to work in the morning, I'll hear things that from customers that I'm continually amazed at the vocabulary that some of my customers have. And yet I still love Jesus. You see, we have to be able to put Jesus at the top of these compartments. When people talk like this, Ben, when the one guy in particular that you and I are probably thinking of right now talks like that, do you offer to pray for him every time that he says those things? No. How far would that get you? Not very. A great guy. But at some point in time, he's probably going to punch Ben in the face. When my customers walk in and they start talking like they do, if I offered to pray for the one that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head, I know he would punch me in the face. And I know that there's probably some of you guys who are like, take it for Jesus. Probably not. Okay? Serious. This is my moneymaker. You know what I'm talking about? You don't want to break that up. You know what I'm saying? No? Okay. The truth of the matter is that we have a tendency to serve based on desire rather than the truth of denying ourselves. We have a tendency to not understand this right here. It's the desire. When you have the desire, it makes the denying and it makes the following a lot easier. Whosoever desires to follow me. Whosoever desires. Lord, this morning, build up the desire. Lord, this morning, build up that hunger, that desire to follow you. Make me like a capitalist. I want to be like a J.P. Morgan for Jesus. I want like a little visor, a little green visor. That's what I want to be. I want to be walking around just like for Jesus in ministry with a little green visor, showing everybody that I'm a capitalist for Jesus. Okay? Horrible example. Soon after that example, Pastor would have danced and everybody would have laughed and it would have been all fine. Okay, but I'm not going to dance and you guys aren't going to laugh. Now, I want us to have a desire to be able to say, that desire is what I need to build up, Lord. That desire is what I need to build up. When you have that desire, what happens? It's easy for us to be able to say, I'm going to follow Him. I find it easier whenever I say, I'm going to put that desire at the top of my list. God, I'm hungry for you. I'm following you. I'm going to do everything for you. That it makes it so much easier. All these things fall into place. Serving the Lord, following Him, taking up the cross. The problem is that we make it optional. So this morning, as we get ready to go, I'd like to take away the option. I know that we have compartments, and I know that we have personalities or mindsets that we have to have in the different areas of our lives to be able to survive there. But my point of this morning, and I believe that the Lord's point this morning, is that we take away the option. We make it mandatory in our lives that we have a desire for Jesus in every single one of these categories. Because if we don't, we may be fruitful for Him, we may be part of the body for Him when we come and enter in these doors. But are we gaining when we leave these doors? Are we gaining when we go to work tomorrow? Are we gaining when we coach the next day? Are we gaining when we go home and interact with our family? Are we gaining? Are we making money? Lord, give us the desire so that I can deny and I can follow. Amen? Let's stand. When I was typing this up, I will admit to saying that when I was typing this up, there were so many things that I wanted to say better or different. But I believe that the barbecued pork affected everything in my equilibrium this morning. But seriously, there are some of the things that I had written down that I probably didn't get across the best that I wanted to. But the fact of the matter is that Jesus' words say, if you desire to follow me, if your heart says to follow him, if you desire to follow him, if you are wanting to follow him, he will help you. He will show you how to deny yourself. There will become a hunger in your life if you desire to follow him. That desire fuels a hunger. And denying yourself really isn't that difficult, is it? It becomes easy to deny when that desire is there. It becomes easy to follow him when that desire is there. And so our prayer this morning is, Lord, give us the desire. Give us the hunger. Give us the love. Give us the passion to follow you, Lord. Because as we do that, God, the denying and the following becomes easy. And as we deny and we follow, God, we gain. We might not gain money or riches or anything like that, but we gain that soul. Father God, we thank you for this morning. Your love, your mercy, your grace, God, let them fill us this morning, God, because we desire to serve you. We desire to follow you, God. Put that passion inside of us. Put that hunger. Put that burning inside of us, God, so that I have to walk out of here this morning looking for an opportunity to serve, God. That I have to make money. That I have to go out there and do these things for you, God, because this desire is so strong. God, let us become so hungry, God. Maybe that it's an addiction to serve you, to follow you. God, to make it to where denying ourselves is not an issue. It's not a problem. It's something that we willingly do to be able to put the love and the life of others in front of us. God, I pray that we would follow you with all of our hearts. God, wherever that may lead. God, maybe I'm not comfortable being a kids' church teacher, being a Sunday school teacher, being a teacher in the school. Maybe I'm not comfortable being the custodian of the church. But God, I pray that you would give me the hunger to follow you, the desire to follow you so much that it doesn't matter what you've called me to do, Lord. I'm going to do it to the best of my abilities. God, feed us this morning. with the desire to follow you. We thank you, Lord, in your name. Amen. Amen. God bless you. Remember to keep praying for Pastor. They've got a few more days left on their vacation. And so remember to pray for him. God bless you. We'll see you guys tonight. Pastor Ken, I believe you are preaching tonight. Awesome. Pastor Ken will be preaching tonight. God bless you guys. Have a great Labor Day.
For more information about Christian Worship Center, visit us on the web at www.cwczilla.org. We'd love to see you in person at 204 Shane Road, Zilla, Washington, 98953.